Broadcasting from Cincinnati, you're listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast. All the news from the world of boxing right here.
Well, I'm talking to you the way I want to talk to you.
Now, here's your host, Eric Lorda.
Welcome to the Ringside Reporter Podcast, where we talk about the latest boxing news. If it's related to boxing, we'll talk about it here. My name is Eric Lorta, and I'm here with my co-host, Ringside Robert, and we have a great show for you today. And as always, you can catch us on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com. Today, we're going to talk about, can Miguel Cotto and a Juan Manuel Marquez fight be on the horizon? Can this actually happen? I don't know. We'll find out. We have a great story for you today as Felix Trinidad visits Pritchard Colon in Atlanta. Our history lesson today, Robert, we're going deep.
Yep.
January 19th, 1983, the Black Mamba, Roger Mayweather, wins his first title against Sammy Serrano. And isn't Mayweather in our fantasy fights also?
Absolutely.
He's in our tournament, isn't he?
Yes.
All right, awesome. Now, our train wreck of the week, we have many to choose from this week. But the train wreck of the week, again, for the first time ever on Ringside Reporter history, deals with an NFL team known as the Cincinnati Bengals, and I use that NFL team loosely. But first, we get started with the heavyweight championship of the world is on the line this weekend. Deontay Wilder, friend of the show, and Arthur Spilska, 12 rounds for Wilder's WBC heavyweight title. Robbie, what do you think of this?
I think it's a good fight for Arthur Spilska. I do think Wilder will win, and we've got two titles on the line this weekend, because if you're in Brooklyn, you're going to see, two of the titles. In my opinion, be kept by its owner, and the other, who should not have been taken away, be awarded to somebody else. And, of course, I'm talking about Charles Martin and Glasgow. So those are going to be your Showtime fights this weekend, both of the heavyweight fights. So I don't know. I kind of feel bad for both of the other guys. If I'm a fighter, of course I don't say no to a title fight. I just don't like the way that they got selected for this, because when Tyson Fury wins the 3/4 of the heavyweight title and then he doesn't get a chance to even defend one of those titles, to me there's something wrong with that picture.
Yeah, I don't know. That's true. I don't think the title should have been taken from him, for sure. But let's focus on the Deontay Wilder fight for a minute here. Now, you mentioned that you think Deontay is going to win. I think that Deontay is going to win, too. But I tell you what, a lot of people are counting Spilska out. And if you haven't seen
Spilska fight, I think that would be a mistake.
I think they're very evenly matched. I really do. I think that both of them have the power to get you out of there. I think they're very evenly matched. I mean, Spilska is one of those fighters that on any given night can take you out of there. And
yeah,
he's been on a good winning streak as of late.
I agree.
You know, man, I tell you, and if you look at their competition level, they're pretty much the same. I mean, they're not like, you know.
Yeah. Well, let's face it, they babied Deontay Wilder for most of his career. You know, let's be honest.
Yeah, he had not soft touches. I mean, you know, look, I mean, the guy has 30-some knockouts. That's not easy to come by. I don't care who you are.
Yeah, 35 wins, 34 knockouts. And champ, by the way, I'm not criticizing you if you're listening, okay? But let's face it, they have brought him along very slowly. His first real stiff competition turned out to be no competition at all when he pitched a 12-round shutout against Stavern, and let's face it, the two guys he's fought since, they haven't brought a whole lot to the table. I'm saying that he should get by Arthur, but Arthur's no pushover. So, you know, the possibility does exist. We could see two titles change hands, but in this case, you know, gut feeling, I'm going to go with the champion, and hopefully Arthur makes a good showing of himself and gets more impressive fights. The only bad part about this is, I wish that it was taking place in Chicago, for all of the Polish community there in Chicago that always supports a guy like Spilska. I don't know how many of them are actually going to be able to go to Brooklyn because, you know, every time he has a fight in Chicago, and you've been there a number of times, you say they always show up for him. So,
yeah, they sure do. There's a big Polish contingent in Chicago. There used to be a big Polish contingent in Michigan as well, but in New York, I'm hearing there's a big Polish contingent there also. So that's okay. Why, you know, I think that's why the fight really is taking place there. But, you know, honestly, man, I would have loved to have seen this fight take place in Chicago.
Yeah, because you would have been there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I would absolutely. It's a short drive for me, you know.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So, yeah, it's one of those things, man. So, but, yeah, I take Deontay Wilder. You know, does he knock him out? I don't know. I don't know that the fight goes the distance. But I think it's a good showing by both guys.
I have a feeling somebody will be going to sleep before the night is over with. I don't think it goes 12.
Yeah, I do too. I don't think it goes 12 with these guys either, man. Both of these guys can get you out of there. And, yeah, I mean, if again, man, if you're counting Spilska, man, that's a dangerous, dangerous move, man, because this is a fight. I tell you what, I wouldn't bet on the fight, put it that way. It's that close. I think it's that close.
Yeah. Now, what's your opinion of Charles Martin and Glaskov? I mean, the last time I saw Glaskov actually in the ring, he struggled with little bitty cruiserweight Steve Cunningham. You know, he won the fight, but let's face it, had it been a much better person on the other side of the ring, he might have lost. I'm leaning towards Charles Martin here to win this title.
I am too, and I hope I like Charles Martin a lot. He's a really, really good fighter. He's a good, good fighter. And Glaskov, to me, has never really impressed me. I've seen him a few times. None of the times I've seen him has he impressed me. There's nothing that he does that he brings to the table. I'm surprised. I'll be honest, man. I'm surprised he's fighting for the heavyweight championship. To me, there's nothing this guy brings to the table that he's going to be even really – he's not even going to be able to compete with Charles Martin in the sense that it's going to be a one-sided fight. Whether it goes a decision, whether it goes to, you know, whether he gets put out of there, I think Charles Martin wins, and I think he wins in a maybe not a spectacular fashion, but a sound fashion.
Now let's assume Wilder beats Spilska and then takes care of his mandatory with Povetkin, which is something he's supposed to do.
Yeah,
you know, provided that Alexander has the guts to step in the ring. What do you think of a fight down the road, saying that, considering if they can't get Fury in the ring for a total unification, what do you think about later on this year about Martin taking on Wilder? Do you think that would be an interesting fight?
Absolutely, and I think the big winner of the IBF sweepstakes here is Deontay Wilder. Because if he gets past Spilska, then he's going to become the unified champ. Because, you know, they stripped Tyson Fury. You know, why they stripped him and everything like that is up for debate. But they stripped Tyson Fury, and then the belt goes where? Right to PBC. You know,
right.
The PBC fighters. Who's the PBC fighter? Deontay Wilder.
Yeah.
So this is brilliant news for him. I mean, he couldn't even – I mean, this is basically given to him on a silver platter, the opportunity, you know, because – you know, you got Glaskov and Martin fighting for the title. Now, here's another wrinkle I think we can throw in there. I believe, and I'm not 100% sure, but if Wilder gets past Spilska and whoever wins out of Glaskov and Martin, that Deontay Wilder could then challenge leapfrog Povetkin and challenge the winner of the IBF championship.
Well, that's another possibility, too, yeah.
Yeah, I believe that you can fight for a unification without fighting your mandatory.
Well, I think that would teach one Alexander Povetkin a very valuable lesson. When you're mandatory, you don't screw around. You don't take other fights.
Airhead.
You know?
Just an absolute airhead Povetkin is.
I mean,
why he took that fight in November is just beyond me.
Yeah. We criticized Martin a couple of weeks ago for bailing out of the Dominic Brazil fight, but now it makes perfect sense. Now, do I think Martin could have beaten Dominic Brazil? Hell yes. I'm, as I've stated many, many times, I'm not impressed with Dominic Brazil.
No.
So, you know, If I was Martin, I would have taken that fight, went ahead and won it, and then went ahead and went for the title. But hey, I don't blame Charles for this, because now he can go get the IBF title and then be the next opponent for Deontay Wilder.
Charles and Martin is a perfect example of what you do and how you handle it if you're a professional fighter.
Right.
Now, you pulled out of the Brazil fight because, hey, look, you know, I've got a title opportunity. Why wouldn't I pull out of it? You know, that's what you're
that's
in
right.
this for. You know,
yeah.
you're in it for the money and the titles and everything like that. You know,
right.
You know, that's how he should have handled it. I wouldn't have fought
yeah.
Brazil either. Povetkin, this idiot, instead of going to fight for the title, he decides, no, I want to fight another guy before I fight him. And you've been in the game long enough. You've had title opportunities. It's not like you're an up-and-comer. Now, for Charles Martin, I would have understood if his management said, nah, we want you to have another fight before you go up against a champ, because we want you to be, you know, have a successful run versus just being one and done. You know, we want you to have a successful run.
Besides, you got to be a little bit worried of Martin's management team, because who's he promoted by? The Mrs. Eddie Hearn of boxing, Kathy Dula. So, you know, unfortunately, you can't trust anything that she's involved in anymore. It's pretty pathetic, and it didn't used to be that way with her, but the last few years, questionable decisions. So, I think Charles Martin is going to win this fight. I think he's going to be Wilder's next opponent, and I think Povetkin gets bypassed because of Alexander's stupidity.
He's such a moron, and I can't even believe his people let him do that. I can't for the life of me believe. I mean, he should fire his handlers. He really should. His management team, everybody, the whole Povetkin army should be fired.
Yeah.
Because they did him no service. Because I tell you what, that's exactly what's going to happen, is Povetkin mm-hmm. is going to be put on ice again, and then he's going to be put on ice for the rest of the time, man, because what's going to happen is Deontay is going to face the winner of this one, and then Povetkin's going to be forced to take a fight because he's going to want to stay busy.
That's
he's going
right.
to be forced to take a fight, and there
yeah.
you go.
And then, of course, let's say Wilder and Martin meet and Wilder wins the IBF title. Well, who's he going to fight next? It's either going to be Tyson Fury or Vladimir Klitschko. You know,
yeah.
So Alexander Povetkin may never get another title shot because of what he did last November.
Yeah, I mean, when you start talking the politics of it like this, I mean, and especially for Povetkin, Povetkin's a guy who's been there, you know. I mean, it was just completely stupid to rely on and say, well, I'm the mandatory. Okay, well, big deal. It doesn't work like that way, you know.
Yeah, when you're a mandatory title contender, when you're the number one, the next guy, you don't take a fight until you get your championship shot, period.
I'll tell you, you know? People ask our guy Saddam Ali how that mandatory thing works.
Yeah, and he's been frozen out, what, 3 or 4 times now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Top contender, mandatory.
Yeah.
Still ain't got a fight yet.
Still ain't got a championship
fight yet.
And the sad part about it is he's tried to arrange other fights to stay busy, and people don't want to fight him then.
Right.
You know.
Nobody wants to fight that guy. That guy's dangerous, man.
You talk about a guy that has frustration. I really feel bad for a guy like Saddam Ali. I mean, he's trying to do things the right way, but yet nobody wants to fight him.
I agree.
You know?
So as far as the heavyweight title concern, like I said, man, you and I both are picking Wilder to beat Spilska, and we're both picking, I think you're picking Charles Martin, is that correct?
That's correct, yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And to get the IBF, and of course our prediction is Wilder's going to face Martin in a couple of them, probably
yeah.
in the summer. That's,
yeah.
I mean, that's the way it's going to be, man. I think he completely goes right over Povetkin.
I mean, let's face it, had Povetkin not taken that fight in November, Eric, Alexander Povetkin would be fighting Deontay Wilder on January 16th. That's how it would have been done had Povetkin not taken that fight in November.
Airhead. Just complete airhead.
Yeah.
I don't know who's advising that kid or what, but yeah, complete airhead.
Yeah. So, no, if you like heavyweight boxing, Saturday night Showtime is the place to be.
Absolutely. And also, too, Robbie's boy, David Hay, the Haymaker. making a comeback in London this week. Stream it. I'm sure it'll be on TV somewhere. I don't have a listing, but it'll be on there somewhere.
Check Sky Sports, Box Nation. Yeah.
12 like rounds, that. Heavyweights. He's fighting Mark DeMori. So David Haye versus Mark DeMori. 12 rounds. So that'll be good. He's making a comeback. We'll see how he looks, man. And then also, too, here, now, Toe to Toe Tuesday, I think, is coming back, maybe?
Tomorrow night. We're recording on Monday. This will be up on Wednesday, so it'll be on Tuesday night.
Right.
11 p.m. Eastern, if you're on the East Coast.
Absolutely.
On Fox Sports 1. So what do we got for tomorrow?
Miguel Flores versus Mario Briones, 10 rounds featherweights. And Ahmed El-Biali versus Andrew Hernandez. Those are light heavyweights.
Okay.
8 rounds light heavyweights. And we've seen El-Biali fight a number of times, I think.
Yes, we have.
And then Bryant Pereira versus Ramon Ayala, 8 rounds welterweights.
El-Biali may be a future opponent for Fonfora, like on one of those spike cards or something.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a guy I want to see fight again, too, is Andy Fonfora.
Yeah.
So I think that would be really good. And that rounds out the weekend's action, man.
That's all we got. There's nothing on Friday that I'm aware of. I think it's Tuesday and Saturday, son.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Okay.
All right.
That's the easiest upcoming fights we've ever done.
Absolutely, man. It's always slim pickings in the beginning of the year. All right, so let's move along to our history lesson now. Robert, January 19th, 1983. Roger, the Black Mamba Mayweather, against Sammy Serrano. This was interesting, man. This was interesting because this was Roger Mayweather's first win, first title that he won. He was 14-0. He was 14 wins, man. That's it. And then they put him in there for a title, and he won. He was fighting Sammy Serrano. Serrano, Puerto Rican guy. They were fighting where? In San Juan, right in the heart of Puerto Rico. Went to his backyard, did him in his crib.
Okay.
Unbelievable. Wins the WBA Super Featherweight Championship. Serrano, let me tell you some backstory on Serrano, man, because this was very interesting. Sammy Serrano had a number of fights when he fought Mayweather. He was definitely a long-standing champion, put it that way. He was a three-time WBA champion, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
He had fought, and he would go on tears where he would defend it like 5 or 6 times, and then he would lose it. He would come back and win it, defend it 5 or 6 times, and then lose it, and then did it again, of course. And then, so the fact that they put Roger in there with this guy, man, was really said a lot about Roger, especially with only 14 fights.
Absolutely.
I mean, and a lot of people don't understand what kind of, I mean, they think of, you know, when you talk about Mayweather these days, okay.
Everybody thinks of Floyd.
Right. And you think of Roger as a trainer, and you think of Roger, you know, as you don't think of, you know, when you think of the Mayweather name, you automatically think of fighters that just don't get hit. You know, you think of defensive minded fighters that don't really want to engage. They don't get hit, you know.
Well, I know for a fact Eric, Roger wasn't that way, and unfortunately his health is suffering now because of it.
Let me tell you what, Roger was a beast. And Roger, he could fight defensively, he could fight offensively, and he was a very good boxer, and that's the thing, man, is that he was very hard to hit. A lot of people don't realize he was like, you know, almost like a Floyd in the sense that he was really hard to hit. But Roger did get into a lot of firefights, you know,
and that really took
its toll.
Yeah, and like I said, his health is suffering now because of it, and that's why when he became a trainer, that's why he taught Floyd to fight the way Floyd does. We all criticize Floyd for the way he fights, but Floyd has a family member right in his own family to realize, okay, if I want a long, successful career, I don't want to take the path that my uncle took. I'm going to take this path, and like it or not, it worked out for him. And he said one of the reasons why he fought the way that he fought was because of what Roger put himself through. And Roger taught him, hey, you want to avoid what I did, so here's what you do.
Yeah, and both his dad, and if you watch, you know what's funny is if you watch Floyd Sr., the way he fought, He was the one he brought, you know, he fought with the shoulder roll and everything like that. And he fought very much like Floyd Jr.
Yeah.
You know, or like the Floyd Mayweather we see today.
Yeah.
And I was watching the him and Sugar Ray, the Floyd Mayweather Sr. and Sugar Ray fight the other day. And just, I mean, he was a very good fighter, man. And they said he really was probably one of the better fighters in that, you know, that he would have been champion. He got, apparently he got shot, and then, of course, he got locked up and everything like that. But,
right,
you know, his career got cut short for whatever reason. But he, man, that guy was a good fighter. That wasn't, mm-hmm. And everybody always thinks of, like, Roger, man, they, everybody. I mean, Jeff Mayweather wasn't a bad fighter. He fought, didn't he fight De La Hoya? I think he fought De La Hoya
at one point. I believe so.
You know, and look, you're not, you got to have something going on. You know, he clearly didn't beat De La Hoya, but, I mean, clearly you got to have something going on to get in there and with De La Hoya if you got, you know.
That's right.
You know, they're not just going to put any schlep in there. So, sure enough, man, all those guys could fight. But Roger, man, with 14 fights, goes into San Juan and just dethrones Sammy Serrano with an eighth-round KO. What a, just a vicious right hand ended the fight. And it was all Roger from the opening bell. I mean, from the time that fight began till the time it ended, it was Mayweather.
Yep.
I mean, Mayweather frustrated this guy to no end. Serrano had trouble finding him. He had trouble hitting him, and he was getting hit just at will.
Right.
And in the eighth round, Mayweather finally dropped a right hand on him that ended the fight. And, of course, that became the pretty well, the long career of the Black Mamba, you know, because he went on to some pretty great things, of course, after those 14 fights.
And keep in mind, he's in our fantasy tournament this week.
Absolutely, because a lot of you asking, who cares about this fight? Well, we care about the fight because Roger Mayweather fights Roberto Duran this week. In
right.
our fantasy fights, okay? So that's why we bring it up, and we might as well move on to that next.
Right.
All right, so our fantasy, for the right to go to the Final Four, Robert, it's going down. The right to go to the Final Four.
Right.
All right, let's start it off. Roberto Duran versus Roger Mayweather.
Well,
who do you got and why?
I got to tell you, I like Roger, but I like the hands of stone even more. I'm going to take Duran here.
Wow. What a jerk move. You know what? We just got done. singing the praises of Black Mamba.
Yeah.
14 fights in. He goes to San Juan, dethrones the champion in his hometown.
Well,
and you're taking Roberto Duran.
Yeah. Could he go to Panama City and do the same thing?
What is wrong with you? We just hyped him up.
Hey,
do you know
hey.
How to follow anything? We just hyped him up, son.
I know, but I'm taking Duran.
He just stuck to his guns. That's right, taking Duran. That's it.
All right.
So I think, man, I tell you what, I think Duran had the better chin. Obviously, Duran could take, you know, a punch from a mule or a kick
that's
from
right.
a mule because mules don't really punch. All right, but I think that Duran had a better chin. I think I think Roger was faster. But, you know, and as far as boxing ability went, man, I like Duran in that, man. I really do. I think Duran had – Duran was very – everybody thinks Duran was a brawler. That couldn't be further from the truth. That's so disrespectful.
No, what I loved about Roberto throughout his entire career, no matter who you put him in the ring against, he could adapt to their style and fight their fight. And I love that about him because, you know, people, okay, I'm going to brawl this guy, okay. No, I'll box this guy. You know, he could change. He could change and adapt, even during fights sometimes. So I think Roberto is underrated as an all-time great fighter. Yeah, he won multiple titles in multiple divisions, but I don't think anybody really sat down and really went through his career and realized what kind of talent this guy was. And I think he would be able to adapt to anything that Roger threw at him.
Here's the deal with Mayweather, and Mayweather's a really good boxer, and he's a very good puncher, too.
Yeah.
I don't think he would have the punch to take Duran out.
No.
And, you know, and you could say, okay, well, look, what about Sugar Ray? He beat Duran. What about Wilfred Benitez? He beat Duran. You know, here's the deal. That was at 147.
Yeah.
That wasn't at 135.
No,
I mean,
and,
that's two divisions north.
And Roberto Duran's best division that he reigned in was probably 135. That's why he's here.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I could, you can make the claim and say, okay, well, you know, Sugar Ray, yeah, and say Benitez. Benitez would have the closest style to Mayweather, and that really wasn't that close.
No.
I mean, Wilfred Benitez is a completely different fighter.
Right.
Than Roger Mayweather. You know what I mean?
That's correct.
I definitely favor Benitez over Mayweather.
That's
just the way it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I just don't think he would have the punch to get rid of Duran. I don't think he would have the boxing ability to get rid of Duran. I think that I could see this ending. I tell you what, I mean, I remember Chavez put Roger out in the second round, and Rocky Lockridge shortly after Mayweather defended a couple times after that,
yeah.
And then got knocked out in the first round by Rocky Lockridge.
That's correct.
I could picture Duran taking him out early.
Yep.
I could picture Duran taking him out late. What I don't picture is this going to a decision. I think Duran
it's a knockout either way.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I think so too, and I don't think this sees the final bell, man. I think Duran takes him out. If it's not early, it's under 8 rounds. I don't think the fight would go under 8 or over 8 rounds. Put it that way.
No.
So I got Roberto Duran. Computer also takes Roberto Duran. Roberto Duran moving on to the final four. How about that? The number one seed.
And I definitely know who he's fighting next.
All right. So next, man, we got Tony Canzonieri. One of my. I tell you what. Since we've been doing this, Canzonieri has really quickly became one of my favorite fighters of all time. Man, watching the film on him has been great. So we got Tony Canzonieri versus Alexis Arguello. Man, Arguello was a beast at 135. My goodness.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're gonna have Panama against Nicaragua here. I think Arguello wins this.
All right, so I think that Canzonieri, man, is in also too. Canzonieri is the last. Oh, he's the last of the older guys, man. That older generation. I mean, we've had a lot of good older guys, man. Stick around, you know, go out early.
Yeah,
in the tournament. Let me see here. What do we have? Henry Armstrong, Joe Gans. Benny Leonard, all those guys suffering losses. Tony Canzonieri, the only one to reach at 16.
Yeah, he reached the final eight now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So there you
final
go.
Eight. So Canzonieri, man, what a fighter this guy was. Just a really good fighter, man. Threw a lot of punches. Really technically sound for that era, man. Very technically sound. All that being said, Arguello was bigger, stronger, and I think he was faster. Looking at the tapes, he was all of those three. And he was such a tough guy to fight because to get on the inside of Arguello, you had to take some chances. And that's not a guy you want to take chances with because not only was he a killer puncher, you know, what do you have, like 60-some knockouts or something ridiculous?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It was up there. I don't know. I think he
won over 80 fights, and I think over 60 of them ended in knockouts. I don't have the exact record in front of me, but that would be
my
guess.
You're looking at a guy. I mean, all right, so you take Tony Canzonieri, who I think is, you know, a very good fighter. Now, you take a guy like Ray Mancini, who's a great fighter also, okay?
Uh-huh.
And you saw what Arguello did to him. I mean, because he had to go on the inside to fight. And Ray Mancini was a knockout guy. He went in there to take your – he went in there to finish fights.
Yeah.
You know. So you take that and you take all that together, man. You have to get in on Arguello. I just don't think Canzonieri does it, man. I really don't.
Nope.
And I think Arguello wins this fight. I think Arguello wins this fight. But I think he wins it by a decision. I think Canzonieri takes him at least to a decision, but I think he loses a unanimous decision.
I agree. And, man, next week, or the next time they fight, Alexis Arguello, Roberto Duran.
And the computer also makes it unanimous. So computer takes Alexis Arguello. Alexis Arguello moving on.
Now, so, I don't know, Eric. They may have actually fought one another because they were contemporaries. So we might have another situation where for the second time, at least, that I can remember in our tournament, where two guys actually fought each other.
I checked. The first one was Roger Mayweather and Livingstone Bramble.
Yeah.
And Mayweather won the fight. So how can you not, you know. Hey, if they fought, the he guy won, you move him forward, you know.
No, I don't know. I don't know if
they
I don't
have
know
never
if that's
fought a, before. They have never fought before.
They have never. Oh, wow. Well, they have never, man, what a fight that would have been.
Wow. So, yeah, that's our fight for next week. No, actually 2 weeks from now.
2 weeks from now, yeah.
When we do the Final Four.
Yeah.
Roberto Duran moves to the Final Four, and he will face Alexis Arguello in the Final Four. Unbelievable. Wow, how about that fight, huh?
I'm really surprised. Throughout their long careers, they never actually crossed paths. That's interesting.
Right. And let's take a look at how Duran got here. I mean, he beat Dooku Kim in the first round, which was our wild card, and for good reason. Then he beat the older fighter Bo Jack.
Right.
And then he fought Roger Mayweather, and he has knocked out everybody. He knocked out Bo Jack. He knocked out. We picked him by a knockout, against Kim. We picked him by a knockout against Jack.
Yep.
We picked him by a knockout against Mayweather.
Yep.
Alexis Arguello on the flip side beat Jorge Linares, the current WBA lightweight champion.
That's correct.
Beat Howard Davis Jr.
Yep.
And then, of course, beats Tony Canzanieri tonight, and then will face Roberto Duran in the Final Four, man. Unbelievable fight. I cannot wait for that fight, man. Cannot wait to go over that one. Wow.
That blows me away that they never actually crossed paths, though, because they fought around the same time.
They did, but you know what? I think they did, but I think Alexis was lighter at the time, and then Duran was moving up in weight.
Okay.
So they never really, and once Duran went up in weight, man, that was it. He was gone. So
he didn't the way he liked to eat, that's true.
Yeah, right. So
there's legendary stories about him showing up to Vegas for fights, and after he worked out, he'd go into the buffets and literally clean the place out.
All right, and let's look ahead to next week, man. We got two to get into the Final Four also to complete to round out our Final Four. We have Pernell Whitaker versus Hector Camacho.
Oh, that's a fight.
Man, that's a good fight. At 135?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's a good fight, man.
Yeah.
And then we have Robbie's hometown guy, Diego Corrales.
Yes.
And he's going to fight Shane Mosley, Shane at 135. A lot of people say, well, what about Shane at one? You know, you think about Shane, a lot of people don't know him at 135. They remember him at 130 or 147 at welterweight.
That's correct.
Let me tell you what, man. Shane Mosley at lightweight was virtually unbeatable, man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that guy was amazing. He was such an amazing, amazing fighter at 135.
Yeah.
And I really wish he would have stayed there longer, but then he came up and beat De La Hoya for the welterweight championship, man.
Yeah, beat Oscar twice, by the way.
And he did beat him both times, by the way.
Yeah,
a lot of people say, no, Oscar got robbed in the second. He didn't get robbed in the second. He got beat both times.
He beat him both times.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So, so that's something to look forward to next week, man.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, Shane Mosley was Oscar De La Hoya's kryptonite, okay?
Yeah.
Oscar could not get past Shane Mosley. I mean, they had to fight twice to prove it. You know?
And what about Whitaker and Camacho was a fight that really could have taken place too.
Oh yeah,
that never did.
I'm really surprised at that. Wow, I'm glad we did this because it makes you think about fights that could have been, man.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Whitaker and Camacho was one of those fights that really could have taken place.
Yeah,
that's what they had asked him with Chavez because didn't the Camacho Chavez fight? That took place at what, 140, didn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Because that was Chavez. To me, that was Chavez's best weight was 140.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, you know, when we were talking about this tournament, a lot of people were like, well, what about Chavez and what about such and such? And I'm like, no, his, you know, because I said, look, man, his best weight was at 140, not 135. Yeah. You could actually argue, though. You know what? I could actually argue that Chavez, you know, his better weight was at 135. But I do think his best weight, really, when he really established himself and made a name for himself, was at 140.
I mean, hell, with Duran and Arguello and the fight we're talking about here, hell, that would have been a terrific pay-per-view thing, don't you think?
Oh, my God, without question. Duran at 135?
Yeah.
I mean,
wow. You
know, and you got Alexis at 130. Oh, my God, forget it, man. I mean, those guys... That's just like fight of the millennium right there, you know. It's our Final Four. It's not even a finals either. It's just a, you know, like wow, man. And then of course you got the two below that. You got Pernell Whitaker and Hector Camacho. And Camacho at 135.
That would have been a hell of a pay per view card.
Camacho in his prime at 135. Man, that guy was a killer. And then you got Shane Mosley and Diego Corrales. Man, that's going to be a fight right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing stuff, man.
Yeah.
So stay tuned next week, and we'll round out the Final Four, and then it'll be good, man. It'll be really good. So let's move on to our news and rumors here. Now, let me tell you this. This really surprised me when I read it. It kind of surprised me, and then it kind of didn't, you know, given the fact of who we're talking about. So Miguel Cotto is looking to fight again. No surprise there, right? We figured that. But he's looking to fight Juan Manuel Marquez. There's rumors that he's going to fight Juan Manuel Marquez. Now, Juan Manuel Marquez, Nacho Berestain has come out and said he's got no problems with it. That's Marquez's trainer.
That's
he's come
correct.
Out and said, we've got no problems with it. He says he can fight Cotto with no tune-ups. He said he's been out of the ring for – let me give you some background on Marquez. He's been out of the ring for almost 2 years. He's 42.
Wasn't right? the last time he was in the ring against Timothy Bradley?
No. Who was his last
one? Because Marquez knocked out Pacquiao. I mean, put him face down, and then his next fight after that is when he fought Bradley. If he's fought since then, I don't remember who it's against.
Alvarado.
Oh, that's right.
It was
against
Mike Alvarado. That's who it was.
Mile High Mike Alvarado.
Yeah,
okay.
Mile High Mike. And he's earned that nickname, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, so he's 42, and rumor has it that he has one leg. He's working on a bad wheel, man. He's had to undergo like knee surgery and everything like that, and he's basically a one-legged fighter.
And like I told Eric before we went on the air, Miguel Cotto is trying to fight in the cripples division.
Right?
You know?
Not to mention, Cotto outweighs him by a significant amount because, I mean, Marquez is not a 155-pound fighter, you know. Because that's
well,
the catch weight. Because it'll be at a catch weight,
Yeah, I have a feeling that Cotto will go down to 147 for this, because I don't see him staying.
Not a 147-pound fighter either.
I don't see Cotto staying at 155 or whatever it is.
Right.
But who knows?
But, yeah, because he can easily make 147.
Yeah.
And
I think that would be a lot. I don't think, knowing what I know about Marquez now, knowing that he's not healthy, if he has any chance at all, it has to be at 147. If Juan Manuel Marquez was completely healthy and there was nothing wrong with him,
right.
I think Miguel Cotto is nuts for wanting this fight because I think Marquez would give him all kinds of issues if he was healthy.
Right.
But we're dealing with a one-legged Sergio Martinez Part 2.
Well, I still think 100% healthy Cotto wins that fight.
Okay.
He may give him some problems, but I still think Cotto wins that fight.
Okay.
Freddie Roach has come out and said, I think he's the perfect opponent for Cotto right now.
Of course he has.
He's 42. Yeah, why not? Of course he said, I'm the perfect opponent for Cotto right now. You know what I mean? Of course he's the perfect opponent for him. Come on.
I mean, like I said, this is Sergio Martinez Part 2. I mean, you're dealing with a one-legged fight, and my guess is they're going to put it on pay-per-view.
Yeah, of course they are. Yeah, really. Unbelievable.
If you're going to do that, put it on the undercard of something. Don't make it a pay-per-view by itself.
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, I don't know why he wants to fight them. I mean, you do know why he wants to fight him, because he's a big name and he dropped. But, yeah, I mean, this is a mismatch. I mean, this is a big-time mismatch, man. And,
okay.
So hopefully the fight doesn't come off. Hopefully Cotto fight some other guy or something like that. But
right.
Yeah. So, all right, let me move on to this next story. This is beautiful. This actually rivaled our main train wreck of the week. This is train wreck of the week number 1A,
Okay.
Adrian Bronner back in the – I think the whole city of Cincinnati could be the train wreck of the week this week. Between Adrian Bronner and the Cincinnati Bengals, I think they could all be train wrecks of the week here.
And you could throw the Reds in there, too.
Yeah, I think so. I think we can because the Reds gutted their team, which is, I think, what the Bengals ought to do. But
and they're still doing that. So.
Yeah, God. Just,
anyway.
Get dry heaves every time I hear that. All right. So Adrian Bronner apparently went to Avion & Company in New York City. Apparently that's a huge jeweler's and they deal with people like Chris Brown.
Yeah.
And commissioned championship rings for himself and his closest friends to commemorate winning a title in his fourth weight class. I can't even read the story without cracking up. Joe Avion, owner, tells TMZ Sports that each ring consisted of about 60 grams of 14-karat yellow gold and 12 carats of flawless diamonds. with about billions engraved on the side. We've got a picture of this on ringsidereporter.com. And the ring itself has AB on the front. It looks like a championship, like a Super Bowl ring.
Yeah.
So it has AB on the top, you know, and the B is, of course, backwards because that's his logo or whatever.
Right.
All right. So it's got AB, and on the side, it's got some nonsense going, and then it's got a picture of Ohio on the side. It looks almost like a championship slash class ring kind of thing, and it's got diamonds all over it and everything like that. $84,000 was the final price tag for all of this.
Well, hey, if you're a jewelry store owner, you take that check.
Absolutely. You know. You take it and you run with it, man. Because,
right.
But as if the belt wasn't enough, you know? Who did he? I'm trying to think. I can't even remember the guy's name who he beat for this.
I can't even remember his name now. But you were there, and only 5,000 people showed up in the wonderful city of Cincinnati.
It was less than 5,000.
Yeah.
And not only can I not remember, the worst part is I was front row, all right? I was there reporting on the fight, and I can't remember who the guy was.
I think it was Albuquerque or something like that.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, I can't even remember who the guy was.
And this is a dude that's going to be fighting a guy by the name of Ashley Fieldkane next.
Who's not even ranked by the WBA, was not even ranked. I'm sure when we take a look at the rankings that come out, I'm sure Ashley will be up in the top 15 this time. But
yeah.
Prior to that, he was ranked number 45.
I mean, what champion calls out the 45th-ranked contender, for God's sake?
The one from Cincinnati, that's who calls him out.
Yeah.
You don't see
anyway,
Sean Porter doing stuff like that, you know?
No. That's why the train wreck of the week is named after Adrian Broner.
Screw it. The entire train wreck of the week is the city of Cincinnati, and he's involved in it, so he's part of the train wreck of the week.
Yeah.
I've changed it up. I've done it.
There you go.
All right. Let's talk about the WBA for a second, this beautiful organization we have here. The WBA has put its foot down and stated that the winner of Quigg versus Frampton, the Quigg versus Frampton fight, will fight Guillermo Rigondeaux.
Well, you know what? Whoever wins that fight, that's going to be an easy cakewalk.
You think so?
Yeah, because Guillermo, look, he's been out of the ring too long, and I got to be honest with you, Eric. When I watched that fight on the Golovkin undercard, I wanted to fall asleep. I mean, I totally support Harold Letterman's opinion, and he said, and I quote, "I don't know why I have to judge this fight because all I want to do is take a nap."
Wow, that's cold blooded, man. That's cold blooded. You know, look, man. The WBA said that that's what they're going to do. They're going to, you know, the winner's got to fight Rigondeaux. Well, look, man, if the WBA said it, then it must be true, you know. This fight, let me tell you what, this fight doesn't have a prayer coming off. You know, let's not forget, Adrian Broner is the WBA champ, and he's fighting a fighter that's not even ranked. Okay?
Yeah, I know that.
All right, so, but I think the Guillermo Rigondeaux walks either one of these guys. Are you serious? You think Frampton or Quigg beats Rigondeaux?
Eric, it's because of what I saw in Rigondeaux's last fight, because
the guy couldn't hit him.
Well, that's true, but Guillermo Rigondeaux, I was gonna learn he's fighting, in professional boxing. The guy he was in the ring against on October 17th, 2015, he should have put away. I mean, there was no excuse for that fight going 10 rounds.
Man, I tell you what, I got Rigo in my top five of the pound for pound.
Well, he's gonna have to be more active and show that he actually knows how to fight because, since I had to pay for the Golovkin fight, I was very disappointed in his performance.
Well, here's the deal, man. You know what you're getting with Rigondeaux, just like you know what you're getting with Floyd.
Yeah.
You know what you're getting. You know that the guy is not going to sit there. You're not going to witness an all-out brawl with Rigondeaux. He's going to try to make you miss and then make you miss some more.
Yeah.
He's not going to. He may not make you pay. He may make you pay. He may not make you pay, but he's going to try to make you miss and then miss again and miss again.
Look, he's a very defensive fighter, man.
I
think he deserves to be on the pound for pound list. I think he deserves to be in the top five. But I was very disappointed in his last performance, and I'm not going to lie about that.
Absolutely, you know. I mean, what people want to see, you know, people want to see you engage. If you're going to be on pay per view, you're going to have to mix it up a little bit. You know, I mean, that's what people want to see. You got to know what the people want to see. Or put on a show. Get the guy out of there.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't mind watching the dude on Showtime or HBO. That's different. But when you're on a pay-per-view stage and people have to pay to watch you, I want to see something more than I got.
I agree with that. Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, like I said, man, you don't want to see fighters get hurt, but you don't want to see them just completely dance around there either, you know? I mean, I like Regan Dow. I like Regan Dow's style. I like, you know, I like the hit and not get hit. I mean, I like Floyd to a lot of extent, you know, the way he fights. But, again,
Boxing is not dancing with the stars, okay?
Right. When I plug in, you know, $50 or $60 or $100 to watch two guys fight, man, I want to see a good fight, you know?
Right.
And he's not that pay-per-view guy. But, again, man, nobody wants to fight this guy because of that, because he's so defensive and he's so hard to hit. He's a guy that gives you nightmares at night.
Well, like I said, because Frampton and Quigg, to me, is a 50-50 fight. So whoever wins that fight, I don't mind if they fight Regan Dow if it happens. But if it happens, it better not be on pay-per-view. It better be on free TV or Showtime or HBO or something where fans don't have to pay any extra money. I've got no problem with the fight if it takes place, but don't dare put this dude on pay-per-view ever again.
Is he on Roc Nation now? Is he with Roc Nation, Regan Dow?
Yes, he is.
That fight ain't happening, man.
That fight ain't happening.
WBA can say it all they want. That fight's not going down. Quigg and Frampton are both with Heyman.
You're right.
That fight ain't going down.
And well, look, we have to talk about it in case it does. So,
right.
You know.
Right, but yeah, that fight ain't going. Slim and none, as Slim just left town.
That's right.
All right, now Robbie brought this to my attention before the show, and this is very interesting because I didn't hear this, and this is why I got Ringside Robert here. He's my man. All right, Triple G offers Billy Joe Saunders $6 million. This has been confirmed by Tom Loeffler. Now, why is it so interesting? Saunders actually got an offer from Triple G's camp for $2 million to fight him, and he scoffed at that. Now, let me tell you something. Nobody's beating down Saunders' door offering $2 million to fight anybody. He's not getting $2 million to fight anybody. So the fact that he turned that fight down lets you know how dangerous this fight is for him.
No, that's why I was surprised when I heard this story.
They called his bluff is what they did.
Yeah. Okay, you don't want to fight him for two? How about six? You know.
Well, that's what they said. That's what he originally said. That was his number.
Yeah.
Saunders had said, give me $6 million, I'll fight him. I'll fight anybody for $6 million. All right, here you go.
Yeah.
$6 million, son. $6 mil.
And
that's
going
to be – he cannot turn that down. Now, you know that you can't turn that down.
And that fight will probably take place in either the Garden in New York or out here at the Forum in Inglewood.
Man, you guys always get the fights out there.
Yeah.
Always get the fights out.
Well, they're saving Cowboy Stadium for Canelo Triple G. They've already got an agreement in place with Jerry Jones for that.
Wow. And what a place to have it, too. I mean, that place is huge.
100,000 people, brother.
Jeez.
It'll make Wembley Stadium look small.
So what do you think, man? I mean, Billy Joe Saunders. And let me tell you what, man. Billy Joe Saunders is no cupcake. You know, the way he beat Eubank and the way he beat
Lee.
Yeah, Andy Lee. The way he beat Andy Lee. Just, I mean, it was a demolition. It wasn't like, I mean, he just completely outboxed those guys.
Yeah, no.
I mean, very good boxer, man. What do you think? I mean, what do you think? I mean, with him and Triple G, do you think the fight comes off?
I do, because I don't know how a fighter says no to $6 million, okay?
I don't either, man.
So I do think it comes off. In a way, if Triple G is successful, and I'm always going to think that he will be until I'm proven otherwise, if Triple G is successful, this gives him not only another belt, but this gives him more negotiating power because he's got a second chance to improve his pay-per-view numbers. Now, granted, nobody here in the United States knows who the hell Billy Joe Saunders is,
right?
Because Billy Joe Saunders is from the UK. But this gives the boxing public a better chance to actually sit down and watch probably the baddest man in the boxing planet right now.
Well, and not only that, I mean, think about, like, Billy Joe Saunders is in a win-win situation right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because, look, I mean, you've got $6 million. You know, number one, they're giving you $6 million to fight him. Number two, you're fighting Triple G. There's no shame in losing to Triple G. He's the best fighter out there right now.
Right.
According to a lot of people. I think it's Andre Ward, but, you know, a lot of people think Triple G. It's a win-win.
Look at it this way. Remember how people used to criticize people for whenever they lost to Mayweather or Pacquiao? Well, in most cases, their stock didn't go down. It was like, okay, you were supposed to lose those people. Well, Golovkin has now reached that status. You're supposed to lose to him. So,
And Saunders is a good fighter. He's alive. He's an underdog, but he's a live dog, that's for sure.
Yeah. I think it'll be Triple G's. This is going to blow you away, but I think this will be Triple G's toughest fight to date.
I don't doubt that one bit, man. Because I think Saunders is better than Willie Monroe. He boxes better than Willie Monroe. He may not move better than Willie Monroe, but I know he definitely boxes better. He's got good foot movement. Willie Monroe was very slick. And I thought William Monroe was probably one of the better boxers that Triple G had fought.
Yeah, and remember, that's when we discovered that Triple G could cut off the ring. Because William Monroe is known for his boxing, and William Monroe, he'd get stuck in the corner and couldn't get out because every move that William Monroe made, Triple G countered, and, most of the time when William Monroe did that kind of thing, other people that he was in the ring with couldn't deal with it. So Saunders is going to have his hands full because, like most people in boxing, he probably thinks that Triple G is just a knockout machine because of 21 consecutive knockouts. But when he stepped, it's kind of like, remember how people used to whine and complain about Joe Calzaghe's fighting style, and then they'd get in the ring with him, and then they'd realize, it's a lot more difficult than I thought it would be.
Oh, absolutely.
The classic case of that, I'll never forget it, Jeff Lacy. Jeff Lacy would complain, and, this guy's easy to beat, I can beat him, and he shows up in England, steps in the ring with a dude, and gets totally destroyed because once you're in the ring with somebody, it's completely different than what you can see on film or even at ringside.
You probably didn't see it, but going around the internet right now, they've got a YouTube of it of Triple G hitting the mitts with Abel Sanchez. Man, that guy is vicious, boy. I mean, just some of the combinations he was throwing and hitting. I mean, they were just so hard, just connecting, just perfect, you know.
Yeah.
Just wow. I mean, yeah. If you guys get a chance, go YouTube it.
So, no, I hope that the BJ Texas fight, win or lose, I don't think it hurts him. And you put $6 million in the bank, you know.
Yeah, I don't think it hurts him at all. I really don't. I win or lose. And like I said, I mean, you're a live dog going in that fight, man. That's win or lose. It does this $6 million. Yeah, it doesn't hurt you.
And again, if Triple G wins this, the Canelo fight even becomes bigger. Because it's a complete unification way around.
Well, Canelo's talking about, Canelo's talking about fighting who? Gabe Rosado?
Yeah, because Gabe Rosado,
Triple G's over here talking about fighting Billy Joe Saunders. I mean, that's a big deal. That's a big difference in class.
Yeah.
You know? Like I said, man, it's a win-win for everybody, you know?
Since it looks like they have a Cowboy Stadium reserved for September for a Canelo Triple G, Triple G is trying to make this fight even bigger than what it ordinarily be because it would be a complete unification for the entire division.
Yeah.
Because Daniel Jacobs, he's just a regular champion. He's just set up to be a mandatory. He's not the actual WBA champion.
Right.
So it would either be Golovkin and Canelo having all the belts. So if Billy Joe Saunders signs his contract and accepts his fight, then later on the middleweight division will only have one king, and if you want any of those titles, you're going to have to go with one of them. But I would mandate, if I was all the sanctioning bodies, I would mandate that there would be no catchweight, that they had to fight at 160, those two, and really see who the true 160 kingpin would be.
Yeah, I agree. I have a feeling that there may be a catch weight going up. But, you know, people have come out and said that Canelo's going to make the 160. I think Hopkins had come out and said that. You know, look, man, if it is a 155 or something like that, you know, whatever, you know. I mean, after that, though, once Triple G gets it, it's going to be 160 from then on out. So, yeah, I'm not big on those catch weights. I don't care. Listen, I could care less about a catch weight, but when you're fighting the title, it's got to be you can come in whatever weight you want. But the fact is, if you're fighting at 160, it needs to be at 160. The other guy can come in at 160, you know.
And I do think that the fight of the year will be in September when those two step in the ring. I mean, we're going to have some good fights throughout the year, but I think the fight that's going to get the whole world's attention this year is going to be Canelo and Triple G.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. So, yeah, BJ, sign that contract, brother.
I'm going to tell you what, if I was Billy Joe Saunders, that contract would have been signed as soon as it got faxed to me.
That's right.
As soon as I got the offer, I'd have been getting my pen out like, what do I sign?
Yeah.
$6 million. I would have signed it at $2 million. I'd have signed it at $50. You know what I mean?
Are you kidding? If the Powerball can be at $1.3 billion, I mean, come on.
$6 million
is billion. Pocket change.
Yeah, $1 billion for Powerball. How about that? What was it, $1.3
billion? As of Wednesday, it'll be $1.3 billion, and I've been playing, man. I'm trying to win.
What are you going to do with that much money? Build your own space program? $1.3 billion.
Well, number one, I bet you one person will not win that jackpot. It'll be split against a number of people because there's like 44 states involved.
That's like Donald Trump money, man. That's insane.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's talk about buy your lotto tickets, you know?
That's right. Yeah, no doubt, man. Yeah. All right, so let's talk about Floyd Mayweather, man, not making any friends in MMA again. This is a good one. This could double as our train wreck of the week also.
Yeah.
It seems that Floyd Mayweather and the UFC champion Conor McGregor are involved in a war of words. The whole thing started when Floyd cried racism about Conor McGregor. You know, Floyd basically said that, I talk trash and I get booed, but McGregor does it and people love him. And then basically says that racism still exists.
Yeah, yeah, and Conor McGregor was on the Conan O'Brien show and actually made this even more substantial. He told Conan O'Brien that he's willing to go into Floyd's world and fight him under Floyd's rules. So, you know, I don't believe in sideshows or circus fights. I don't think this will ever happen. There's a number of people on the internet who are jumping at this opportunity and they can't wait for these two to actually do this. I think it's disgusting. Yes, Floyd is trying to get publicity because he wants to bone up his promotion company, and I do not believe that Floyd Mayweather is retired. I still think he's going to fight, but this would be a complete joke. Floyd Mayweather would take apart Conor McGregor in the boxing ring.
Yeah. Oh God. Oh yeah. I mean, it's not. I mean, you're talking about the best boxer in the world, one of the best boxers in the world. You can't. Just like Floyd wouldn't stand a chance if he went in that ring against Conor McGregor. You know what I mean? Because once you're down on the ground, he's not going to be able to get. He's not. He just can't do anything. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things, man. You can't. There's no way it'll ever happen. You know, look, man, Conor McGregor, of course, fires back and says, took to Facebook to address Mayweather because, you know, where else is better to air your grievances out, you know? He said, and I quote, "Floyd Mayweather, don't ever bring race into my success again. I'm an Irishman. My people have been oppressed for our entire existence and still very much are. I understand the feeling of prejudice. It is a feeling deep in my blood. In my family's long history of warfare, there was not one time where just having the McGregor name was punishable. There was one time when having the McGregor name was punishable by death. Do not ever put me in a bracket like this again. If you want, we can organize a fight, no problem. I will give you a fair 80-20 split purse in my favor since your last fight bombed at every area of revenue. At 27 years of age, I now hold the key to this game." He said, "The game answers to me now." So
yeah, 27 against 39. Come on.
So, yeah, but I think, you know, this does good to keep both of them relevant. This keeps, you know, both of them relevant and everything like that. Tell you what, Conor McGregor better focus on his problems because he's got Rafael Dos Anjos next, or Dos Anjos next. And Dos Anjos is the current lightweight champion. McGregor is going to try to do something in the UFC that I don't think has been done, to be honest.
Win two titles in two different weight classes.
Two different weight classes at the same time.
No, I don't follow the UFC, but I can answer. I don't think it ever has occurred.
No, that's Henry Armstrong type stuff right there.
Yeah.
So he's going to try to do that against Rafael Dos Anjos. Rafael Dos Anjos is an absolute savage. This guy, man, this guy could be probably one of the best pound-for-pound guys out there. He's a killer at lightweight, man. He's no joke. So, and he actually, Conor was installed as the underdog in the fight. So we'll see what happens when they fight. So,
okay.
Also, too, now let's talk about Chapo, El Chapo. Robbie's boy, the notorious drug lord El Chapo, is in the news this week.
Not mine.
El Chapo was arrested this weekend after a firefight in Sinaloa, Mexico. The Mexican Marines don't mess around, boy. They went in there and took him down. Apparently, one of El Chapo's entourage made his way to the neighbor's house. Why is this important? Enter former world champion Fernando Montiel. That's right. How's that for a bad day? You're looking to get away from the police, and you wind up in his house. Montiel said that he heard gunfire down the street, gathered his family up, and then took him to his bedroom. Marines then stormed the house and found the man from El Chapo's crew hiding in one of his rooms in the house. Montiel and his family, thankfully, are fine.
Yeah.
How about that? What in the world? I mean, you know, look, this from the world champion's house, like a few, there's a firefight a few doors down with the, you know, most notorious drug lord there's ever been, you know. He's more notorious, he's about as notorious as Scarface, you know. I mean,
yeah,
this guy
really.
A couple houses down, you know, and there's gunfire, and then the guy finds his way into his house. Apparently Montiel, no dummy, has a pretty sophisticated, what security system.
Right.
That was the guy got in there and disarmed really quick. So, you know. So, wow. Montiel had no idea that he was even in the house. So, pretty crazy.
Wow. Incredible.
Yeah. Let's talk about here. Sullivan Barrera versus Andre Ward. This fight could possibly take place on – this fight was actually supposed to take place on March 26th. According
right.
to sources, Barrera signed the contract.
Yes, he has.
He's waiting for Ward. He's accused Ward of stalling. Names being kicked around for a potential Ward fight were Sullivan Barrera and Marco Antonio Parabon. What we do know is that Parabon has actually been ruled out. So I think the fight's going to take place, but it seems like there's some gamesmanship here on the part of Ward.
Yeah, and the fight is supposed to take place in Oakland. And again, Andre Ward never sells out his hometown arena. And he probably will not sell it out this time either. The only way that arena gets sold out is by the world champion Golden State Warriors, who are currently 35-2.
They got lucky, though. They're lucky. They're lucky. Cleveland's going to come back. Cleveland's going to take it this year. It's all done. It's all done, man. Cleveland's year. It's all over with the crying, son.
We'll find out in June, brother, when it goes down on pay-per-view, okay?
All right. Kell Brook, this just in too. Kell Brook will fight Kevin Bisier. They have come to agreement, and the fight is actually scheduled for March, or is actually expected to take place in March sometime.
That's his mandatory, so yeah, he's got to get it out of the way. But
right.
I hope to God, Kell, you take on Amir Khan and get it over with and shut this guy up forever.
The illest man in Nebraska is back. Terrence Crawford will fight Hank Lundy on February 27. Felix Verdejo is also on the undercard and will be fighting a top 10 opponent, we're told. This is funny because we talked about Terrence Crawford quite a bit last week and in depth last week on the podcast, but many of you didn't hear it. In fact, none of you heard it because
no.
It was actually cut out of the podcast. Because, of course, Ringside Robert told me that Terrence Crawford's next opponent was going to be Mauricio Herrera.
Hey, I thought that would be the better fight, okay? You know.
Actually, it was my mistake. I had said Terrence Crawford versus Mauricio Herrera has already been taken. And you know the worst part about that is I read it was Hank Lundy. And for whatever reason, Herrera was on my brain.
Yeah.
And I put him down, and I wrote it down, knowing yeah. that it was wrong name, you
yeah.
know. And of course, I you know, through the course of the show, we just went with it.
Yeah, that's okay. But don't feel bad for Herrera. He got a rematch against one of the people that he actually lost to. He's going to be fighting, and I don't have a date on it, but he's going to be fighting Baratnikov.
Yeah, that's going to be a good fight. Yeah, so don't feel bad too bad for Herrera. You know, so absolutely. What do you think about the Terrence Crawford Hank Lundy fight, man? It's a good fight.
I'm going to take the guy from Nebraska all day.
I am too.
Hank's a good fighter, but I don't think he's got a shot against Terrence Crawford.
No, I don't think so either, man. I think Hank's a really good fighter. Hank will try to rough him up, but that just play. Terrence Crawford is just too good of a boxer. And Hank, you know, while he's got the power, he's not going to be able to land anything on Terrence Crawford, I don't think. He might get his attention, but that's about it.
And I still think Terrence Crawford got the short end of the stick. He should be fighting against Pacquiao, but that's my opinion.
That's big, yeah. I'd much rather see him and Pacquiao fight than Bradley Pacquiao 3.
That's ridiculous. Anyway,
right.
No, Terrence wins this, and I think he wins it going away, honestly.
Yeah, I wouldn't even sit a BW3s and wait for the Pacquiao fight, the Pacquiao-Bradley fight. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
It's just not a fight that just doesn't interest anyone.
No.
Here's a feel-good story, man. This is a good as sad story, man. But Felix Trinidad showed up for a surprise visit to Pritchard Colon. As you remember, Pritchard Colon was put in a coma last year after a fight with the who was it against?
Terrell Williams.
Yeah, Terrell Williams, and you know, a lot of rabbit punches or punches behind the head being thrown and everything like that. He showed up with his Felix Trinidad showed up with his mother and sister to visit Colon. The Colon family posted the picture on Facebook. Pritchard showed signs of excitement to hear and feel his idol. Read the letter from Colon's family.
Right.
He shook his head, looking for voices of Tito and Trinidad's mom. According to them, they spoke, and he tried to move his head and move his mouth as if he was looking to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Trinidad said, "I came with my mom and one of my sisters. We talked and prayed with him for a while. Great faith with his father and mother. It was a beautiful experience, and I have great hope that God will raise him up and out of that bed," said Trinidad. He told El Nuevo Dia newspaper.
Okay.
Ironically, this is not the first time Trinidad and Colon have met. There was a picture on Ringside Reporter that was taken with Trinidad when Trinidad was champion, and Pritchard Colon was just a kid dreaming of being a professional fighter. And you can see that on Ringside Reporter. It's tough to see, though. It's tough to see the picture of him as a kid, and then, you know, at the very bottom of the article, we have a picture of him visiting him in the hospital. It's just such a tough thing to see, you know, this little kid with all the hopes and dreams, and then, of course, you see it's a tough thing to see. But it sounds like he's coming along. I mean, it sounds like he's making some progress. I know it's a long road back, man, but it always starts with a step, you know.
Yeah, no, and continue to pray, and I'm sure they've got donate buttons on websites to donate. Do whatever you can for this dude, you know.
Absolutely, yeah, because just a horrible thing. Nobody wants to see that happen in boxing, and
no.
it's always tragic.
And the sad part about it is he had a bright future ahead of him.
Good fighter, and even if like I said, his fighting career never took off. You're still talking about a young guy that, you know, it's a young guy, you know, and he's got the world by the tail at that point. And,
yeah.
You know, just hate
23 years old, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Just hate to see that happen.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move ahead now. Our train wreck of the week. Now, normally, let me tell you right now, normally we don't do this here on Ringside Reporter. Normally, you know, we may touch on a UFC story here. We may touch on things like that. We usually, it's a boxing show, so we talk about boxing, you know.
But actually, what occurred on Saturday night in the Riverfront City actually could fit into boxing, because you basically saw an entire NFL team on Saturday night have the championship in their hands, so to speak. View this like a title fight. You're winning the title fight. You're going to win, by knockout. You had your opponent on the ropes, and you let up, and you let off the gas, and you self-destructed, and your title goes out the window.
All right. So let me introduce somebody. This is my wife, Lisa, who's a big Bengals fan, because our train wreck of the week, of course, is the Cincinnati Bengals. We live in Cincinnati, as everybody knows, the Queen City, the real Queen City, not North Carolina. Not Charlotte, North Carolina. We are the Queen City, okay? So being Bengals fans, we are just conditioned to hate the Steelers. That's just the way it is, okay? And so that's why when I watched this game on Saturday unfold, you know, we just went ballistic. And I said, this is definitely the train wreck of the week. I've got to let this out. I've got to tell the world about this, or at least the six people that listen to my podcast about this. All right. Lisa let out so many expletives through the course of this game. It was just unbelievable, okay? Our train wreck of the week, Cincinnati Bengals, with under 2 minutes left. Cincinnati intercepts a pass from Pittsburgh, has the lead, and the ball is around the Pittsburgh 20. The game's over. All right, run the ball, kick the field goal, that's game. Cincinnati then takes over, and then they give the ball to Jeremy Butterfingers Hill, and he completely fumbles the ball and turns it over. This idiot cost us our first playoff game win in 25 years. Robert, 25 years.
Yeah, the last time you won a playoff game, Norman Boomer Esiason was your starting quarterback.
25 years. And we'll get to Marvin Lewis, we'll get to Vontaze Burfict, Pac-Man Jones, and all those other idiots in a second. Okay. All this idiot has to do is hang on to the ball. You don't even have to gain any yards, and it's a chip shot field goal.
That's correct.
That's all he has to do. Hang on to the ball. And he fumbled it. And he fumbles it. Not only did he fumble it, he turned it over. All right? All right. All right, what's done is done. He fumbled. Our defense has been good all night long. Defense was really good. Played really well. No way they're going to score. No way they're going to score. They're not even going to enter field goal range because they just don't have enough time.
No. Nope.
They don't have it. All right? Enter Vontaze Burfict. This moron decides to decapitate a Steelers receiver, Antonio Brown, after the play. Burfict reportedly also spit on one of the offensive linemen of the Steelers during the game. I think it was DeCoco or DeMarco.
Something like that.
I don't know. It was something D something. I don't know. All right. Not only that, when he sacked Ben Roethlisberger, I just saw a video of this today. The sack was not fine. I saw a video. It was not. I saw a video of it today.
That sack was fine. No problem with that. No problem at all with the sack.
You know what's ironic is watching Roethlisberger get carted out of that stadium 10 years after they did it to
Carson Palmer.
How much of a Bengals fan is Lisa? Our dog is named Carson, okay?
Okay.
One of our dogs is named Carson after Carson Palmer.
He's not smart enough for us to rename him.
Right. So... All right, so and now when he Burfict tackled Roethlisberger on that play where he injured him, you see him, it's plain as day. Burfict gets him on the ground, spins around, and knees him right in the shoulder.
And
By the way,
it caused Ben to have a separated shoulder, so he probably will not be playing against Denver.
I just read today he probably will play, but he'll be limited, and it was a sprained AC joint is what they were saying today.
Well, okay, I read a report. You might have an updated report, but the one I read earlier today was separated, so okay.
Yeah.
But either way, he's going to be compromised.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have no problem with that.
And also, too, Domantas Peko, a defensive guy for Cincinnati, came off the bench at one point in the game, still had the coat on. From the bench, all right, and pushed another player during the game.
Actually, I think the dumbest part about that is he took the coat off right before he went on the field. So let's make sure everybody sees your number while you do the dumbest thing I've ever seen you do.
Pac-Man Jones, as this whole debacle is going on, the Domantas Peko happened earlier in the game.
Right.
Pac-Man Jones, as soon as Vontaze lays out Antonio Brown, Pac-Man Jones decides to go, postal, decides to push one of the Steelers' coaches, Joey Porter, to get another penalty tacked on to the other penalty.
Not only that, Pac-Man, he also knocked down one of the officials.
Oh, what a moron. What a moron. You know, 30 yards in penalties in the final seconds of the game. Are you serious? So Pittsburgh lines up, has a chip shot field goal, and then wins the game. This was the most amazing choke job I've ever witnessed in a game. This actually rivals a choke job that the Yankees did when they gave up a 3-game lead in the ALCS to the Red Sox.
Yep.
I've got no words on it. This was so unbelievable to me. And not only that, the fans in Cincinnati went haywire as expected. Pelted Roethlisberger with beer cans and bottles and stuff as he's being cheered him out. He's getting carted off the field. There's you know, bottles being thrown on the, you know, on the playing field and everything like that. It was just a horrible night.
And the ironic thing, you talk about Carson Palmer, he could actually wind up playing in the Super Bowl, guys.
I don't know who I root for. I really,
whoever's playing.
The stadium to blow up. I really root for the stadium to blow up at that point. You know? Yeah, right.
But no, as far as the Cincinnati Bengals are concerned, as far as I'm concerned, that whole organization needs to be flipped over. Marvin Lewis needs to be fired.
Yep.
And an entire new coaching staff need to be brought in, and you need to cut those players, Jones, Burfict, and anybody that was involved in ridiculous activity.
Well, but what about Mike Tomlin? No one is saying fire Mike Tomlin, and he couldn't keep control of his coaches.
In Cincinnati, we expect the Steelers to take
I think Joey Porter also needs to have some sort of discipline.
Well, but what about the coach who pulled Reggie Nelson's hair on the sideline?
Yeah, did you see that? When
he got flagged for pushing him and pulling his hair, which, I mean, first of all, he's an idiot for having hair that long, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah. I didn't see that part.
I'm hearing a lot of national talk about Marvin Lewis losing control of his team, which is a valid criticism for sure, but I've not heard a single person say that Mike Tomlin should go, and this is his coaching staff.
Yeah, I think both sides were wrong here, okay? But because of the meltdown that Cincinnati suffered when they had the lead in the game.
Lying when he said, I said a lot of four-letter words.
The lead and the game. The game was over. Yeah. We have our first playoff win in 25 years. The game's over. This idiot fumbles the ball. He would be gone. He would have packed his bags that night.
Well, I don't care.
I don't care if he says the game's. And he came out after the fact. He came out after the fact and said, you know, the loss is on him. He shouldn't have fumbled the ball. Yeah. Yeah, it was. And you're still gone. Yeah, I still would escort you out of town.
Well, and the award Cincinnati would have gotten, Eric, had they won the game, they would have been playing in New England on Saturday.
Which would have been a good game for us.
Which I think would have been a good game for us, too.
Because we would have had Andy back.
Yeah.
But honestly, the worst part to me is, I mean, as Bengals fans, we're conditioned to watch them fall apart in the last minutes of a football game. The worst part for me is seeing our city, the fans, melt down. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger went to Miami University, which is in Cincinnati.
Yep.
I have heard horror stories from people who were at Miami at the same time about his behavior. We've obviously heard things about his behavior since then.
He was involved in, what, two different rape cases?
Right.
You know.
And, I mean, from everything I've heard, I think he's a terrible human being. However, the fact that some of our fans were throwing things on him as he was being carted off the field, I was so ashamed to be a Cincinnati Bengals fan for that moment. And I can tell you, most of the city wouldn't behave like that, but unfortunately now that's our reputation.
I got to be honest. I really don't have a big problem with that so much.
Well,
my problem is with that stupid fumble. I mean, I'm serious. I could care less if they're throwing stuff at him. I got to be honest, man. You know, who cares? They're throwing stuff at you. You're a professional athlete. Just suck it up and deal with it.
That's okay, Lisa.
You just suck it up and deal with it.
That's okay, Lisa. You guys live in a city where your fans fall apart. My favorite team may be relocating, so, you know.
Yeah, I think that's such garbage. Oh. But I will tell you, I honestly think that most Cincinnati fans I know really, truly love to be miserable.
And we also, by the way, we also had a very bad Carson Palmer experience. So, you know.
Yeah, Oakland. Carson Palmer went to Oakland.
He was terrible in Oakland.
Yeah.
Believe me, I feel your pain, and I don't like the fact that he might wind up in the Super Bowl either. But you know, it is a distinct possibility. The only because Arizona is going to beat Green Bay this time. I think so too. I don't think Arizona really cared about playing Green Bay a couple of weeks ago, but I think this time around, Arizona beats Green Bay. The only hope to keep Carson Palmer out of the Super Bowl is Carolina beating Seattle and Carolina beating Arizona in the championship game.
I have lots of hope for Carolina accomplishing that. They're a good, good football team.
Yeah, listen, let's get it straight here. No way Carson Palmer makes it past the next round in the playoffs. None. You know why? Because Carson Palmer is Carson Palmer. And pretty soon he's going to remember he's Carson Palmer, and he's going to throw an interception at the right time or the wrong time, whatever team you're rooting for.
Well, Eric, I do think he beats Green Bay, but I think he's going to have trouble against Carolina's defense.
I don't even know that he gets past Green Bay.
Green Bay's been playing suspect football. They got lucky on Sunday.
Yeah, because Washington's defense ain't no great thing either. So, no, I think Arizona gets past Green Bay, but I don't think he gets past Carolina. And as far as the AFC goes, I don't know what happens now, because with Ben being hurt and playing at a hurt, not being effective, most likely, and you got Peyton Manning coming back off of injury. I don't know. Now I have no idea who wins that Pittsburgh-Denver game. Because you got two quarterbacks there compromised. I think New England and Kansas City is going to be interesting. And I'm in a football contest, and I've got to decide by Friday who wins all these games. So, you know.
Well, I'd pick Denver for sure, because it's hard to play at Mile High. And Antonio Brown, I think he's going through he was diagnosed with a concussion over the weekend. And I'd be surprised to see him back on the field on Saturday.
No, I don't think he plays. I don't think he plays Sunday either.
Yeah, I think you got to favor Peyton Manning and Denver. Manning looked amazing that last game.
No, he did. He handed the ball off. That's all he did.
Listen, this is where I got the peanut gallery over here. Listen, Manning looked really good, all right? He looked better than Andy Dalton did this weekend, I'll tell you that.
That's probably true.
Yeah, he holds that clipboard like nobody's business, let me tell you what.
You leave my boy alone.
You know, another dog named Andy or something like that, watch. I thought AJ McCarron did it.
Dog.
It's another dog. What are you talking about? AJ McCarron, I thought did a great job. I thought he did a great job in the second half of the game, and that's what we're waiting for, man. I mean, he's a good quarterback. He's a really good quarterback, man. But I just can't believe they fell apart like that. But Pittsburgh going to Denver, I just don't see it happening. All right, let me ask you this, because this is something we were debating on earlier.
Okay.
All right, because you watch boxing, we watch boxing, and we know what a knockout looked like. All right. Was Antonio Brown knocked out?
Yes, he was.
Thank you. Lisa says no. He was knocked out. I saw him hit the ground. He was knocked out.
Did you DVR the game?
Oh, God, no. We're smarter than that. We don't want to watch that.
Okay, but I was going to say, if you DVR the game and go back and play it and play that back in slow motion, you'll definitely see that he's completely knocked out. That's why it took them so long to get him off the field.
See, but my Bengals, I've heard some Bengals players who are, you know, morally the highest you can possibly imagine have attested that he was faking it.
Vontaze Burfict. You're talking about Vontaze Burfict.
Yeah, kind of was.
I saw him hit the ground, and when he hit the ground, he didn't protect himself. He was just out. You could see his arms stretched out. He was gone. Guys get knocked out, and you've seen him. You know when a guy is knocked out when he's faking it. He was not faking. He was out cold.
No, to put this in boxing parlance, Eric, it reminded me of when Manny Pacquiao went face down against Marquez.
Yeah, that's exactly what it looked like, because he wasn't protecting himself or anything. He just went out.
Yeah.
He just went out.
So, it was a legitimate knockout. And done very illegally, by the way.
Yeah, idiots. Just complete idiots. And, you know, but nobody, you know, nobody's talking about Gio Bernard going out like that, though.
He was knocked out.
He was knocked out cold. And they threw the flag. They didn't throw the flag on that one, but they threw the flag. Those officials, you know, and, you know, I think they did the best they could. But why that play on Gio was not a flag, was not a penalty, I'll never know.
I think those officials were kind of overwhelmed with everything that happened.
They had to separate the two teams. They had to separate these two idiots at halftime, at before the game. You know, they had to have officials in the front and coaches in the front on the 50-yard line to make sure they stayed in place.
Because the last meeting, that was a problem, that they got into a fight before the game even started.
Yeah.
And the Steelers guys all week apparently were tweeting Vontaze Burfict. They were tweeting him saying, you know, we're going to get you. You're a choke artist, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and he lets his get to him. They said that they had to calm that Vontaze, they were on the sideline. The reporter on the sideline, that cupcake on the sideline, said that that Vontaze Burfict is out of control on the sidelines. They pan over. He's in the game. All right. So if you got somebody that's out of control on the sidelines, why they're putting him in the game at that point? I have no idea.
That kind of reminded me of the Odell Beckham a couple of weeks ago when the Giants played Carolina. Remember all that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he ended up getting suspended for the next game because of how out of control he was. And, oh, by the way, that's one of the reasons why the Giants fired Tom Coughlin. So, and they're not calling it a firing, but let's face it, it was.
Yeah.
Oh, Tom Coughlin was on his way out regardless. But I am quite certain that we will not see Vontaze Burfict for probably two games, I would guess, at the beginning of next season.
If your organization is smart, you never see him on your team.
That won't happen. I mean, Mike Brown is notorious for wanting to try to save people from themselves. So
why don't Mike Brown save himself from himself? All right, because he's put a lousy product on the field. I tell you what, I cannot. Hill should be fired. Burfict should be fired. You know, Pecco should be fired. Pac-Man Jones should be fired. They should just pull a Cincinnati Reds. They should bring in Bob Castellini from the Reds and just gut this entire team. That's exactly what they should do.
Hey, if the Cleveland Browns can hire a baseball guy that doesn't know anything about football, anything is possible.
I would rather have the Cleveland Browns right now than this team.
Shut up. No, you would not.
Yes, I would.
Eric, does that mean you want Johnny Manziel and all his antics?
Oh, my God, no.
I would take Johnny Manziel in a minute, all right? Johnny Manziel at least can throw the ball. Yeah.
Yeah, as long as he's not throwing down a few beers.
Hey, he's not even smart enough to hide his location well.
They said they spot him in Vegas with like a disguise on.
No, he posted a picture that had the location stamp, Las Vegas, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm in Cleveland." No, you're
That's all we need. That's all we need is Johnny Manziel here, and then the team is complete with these morons.
Oh yeah.
Unbelievable.
I feel bad for you guys because I thought you guys had it won, and I've never seen a self-destruction like that in a football game before.
I've never seen anything like it. I really haven't. I mean, I remember back in the day when we used to watch football in the 80s, they had that fantastic, toward the end of the game, they would have that commercial, and it was, I think Alcoa sponsored it or something like that. It was called Fantastic Finishes.
Yeah.
You remember this, right? And they used to show like teams melting down. I still don't think any of those compare to what we saw on Saturday.
No.
Well, perhaps the 88 Super Bowl might have compared to that.
No, that wasn't a meltdown. That was just poor calls on the officials.
Now, remember, Boomer, have you seen the NFL films in regarding that since then?
No.
Because
no.
Boomer admitted, he said, after he scored, they had him mic'd up on the sidelines. He said, "I left too much time on the clock."
We haven't watched that again. Eric won't even let us watch the full movie of Draft Day because film comes up in that from that.
I turn it. Every time it comes up, I can't watch it. I can't. It just,
yeah.
It sucks. It is. It really is. I can't watch it. If it's, and I hate like Super Bowl Day when they do the coverage, as soon as it comes on, channel gets flipped. I don't care if it gets flipped to Nickelodeon or something else. I don't care. It gets flipped. I don't watch it. 30 seconds later, we can come back. But I'm not watching. I'm not watching the clip from the game. It just don't happen. We're watching that movie Draft Day with Kevin Costner about the Cleveland Browns or whatever.
Right, right.
We're watching that, and that stupid clip comes off. I turn the TV. Lisa's yelling at me. I said, "I'm not watching it." We got to turn it back like a minute or two later, and we missed most of the movie.
I know, but Boomer freely admits if you watch the NFL films, they have him mic'd up on the sidelines. He says. He said, "Oh, I left too much time on the clock," because Joe Montana was notorious, and I hate the 49ers because I'm a Raider fan, but Joe Montana was notorious. If you left him any time on the clock at all, he always won the game.
Let me tell you what, to this day, I hate Joe Montana, I hate Jerry Rice, I hate John Taylor, all three, and I hate the 49ers too. I hate them. I can't stand them. To this day, we don't know.
I was born and raised a Raiders fan, and you don't, oh... Anything 49ers, we don't tolerate.
No,
you know?
Not at all. Not at all. So that was our choke job of the week, train wreck of the week.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Probably the last NFL game you'll probably hear on here. So.
Hey, I don't know if anybody in football will ever do what Cincinnati just did, okay?
Yeah, I tell you, and continues to do, And the worst part about this is they came out, and Cincinnati's come out and said that Marvin Lewis is in no danger of losing his job. Well, seriously? Seriously?
Okay, but do you really want to go back to Bruce Coslett and Dick LeBeau and Dave Shula?
No, but Lisa, you could have Chip Kelly.
Yeah. Okay, but Marvin or Mike Brown has hired exactly one coach who wasn't horrible. His track record is way terrible.
Well, yeah, Mike Brown kind of reminds me of Al Davis.
they're cut from the same cloth. Yeah, absolutely are. Only Al Davis had a football mind, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
Mike Brown,
Al Davis, towards the end of his life, kept making one mistake after another. another story that'll make you sick, it looks like Hugh Jackson could very well be the next coach of the 49ers.
They're going to announce it on Tuesday from what we're understanding here. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Jackson, he only got 1 year here in Oakland, and, you know, and he went 8-8, which wasn't too bad. So I'm glad he's getting a second shot, but I wish it was with somebody else.
No doubt.
Wasn't it Lane Kiffin over there? Wasn't it Al Davis and Lane? Was it Lane Kiffin?
Yeah.
They brought in, and Al Davis went on the big screen and showed this big PowerPoint presentation on why he fired him.
He held a news conference and they did that. Yeah.
It was old-fashioned overhead slides. I think.
Was it?
Yeah.
It wasn't like a computer.
No, it was like the old-fashioned. You're in elementary school again.
Yeah. But no, and of course he hired Hugh Jackson, and Hugh Jackson got one full year and went 8-8, and I thought he did a good job, and then he was shown the door. You know.
And Hugh Jackson's been outstanding here as our coordinator. I mean, he's been great. Yeah, he's been really great.
But it looks like he's San Francisco bound, probably tomorrow.
So now it's time to hate Hugh Jackson because I hate the 49ers, and he's along with them, so...
Well, you know, I don't blame you. I mean,
I don't either. I mean, you got to take a head coach. How would you not go for after a head coaching job after a season like this?
Yeah,
you know
I mean? He deserves a head coaching job, but I wish it was with somebody else.
Jeremy Hill should be horsewhipped after that fumble. I still can't believe he fumbled that ball.
He had one job.
That's what he had. One job. You had one job. This is your gig. Hang on to the ball.
Yeah, if you knew that Hill was going to fumble, if they wanted to run the ball, why didn't A.J. McCarron do a quarterback sneak or something?
I don't know.
You know?
But I will say, even before that, their play call and their two-point conversions still leaves me scratching my head. Because if they made that, then the field goal would have tied the game.
Exactly, and you would have had overtime.
I mean, who throws the ball backwards when they're trying to get a two-point conversion? I don't understand that.
We do. That's who does. We do.
AJ Green, your best receiver, one of the best receivers in the league, on the sidelines for that play. I got nothing.
Morons. Just morons. No, they deserve to lose that game. Deserved it.
But no, major changes need to take place, but it doesn't look like they're going to. So. You know.
Unbelievable. And people are saying, you know, I heard people say, well, the Bengals this year are just a product of bad luck. Let me tell you something. They have not won a big game in 25 years. That's the long and short of it.
Yeah,
they have not won. Since Marvin Lewis has taken over, they have not won a big game.
They beat Denver last year Monday night.
That's a regular season game. Look, this year, that Denver game told me everything I needed to know about this team. The way they were handling Denver...
Under Marvin Lewis, they're 0-7 now in the playoffs.
They went to Denver a couple of weeks ago and looked like an amazing team in the first half. In the second half, Denver adjusted, and this team completely melted down. That tells you everything that you need to know, that this team isn't going anywhere under coaching.
Nope.
Because that's the deal. You have the players. You know, when you melt down under big games, that's not usually the players, although in Hill's case, yes, it is. You know, but when you melt down in big games, that's usually coaching. He couldn't control his team here.
Yeah. No, it's time to make a change, but considering who you have in charge, you probably won't do it, you know, because Mike Brown only does things when he's forced to.
He's getting pretty old, though. Maybe he won't have him around too much longer.
Well, Al Davis has died, and the Raiders are starting to improve. So.
You guys are cold fish, man. That's unbelievable. He's wishing death on people.
Mike's daughter Katie seems like she's pretty good, so I'll take that.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you people? Look at you people. Just no sympathy, no compassion, nothing.
You should have heard him on Saturday night.
I was as calm as I am now.
I don't buy it. I think that's a lie, Eric. But
I was calm as a Hindu cow. I was very calm. All right. Well, listen, that'll do it for this edition of Ringside Reporter. As always, you can catch Robert on Twitter at Ringside Robert, or you can call Ringside Robbie's Corner at 773-572-7781. And listen to all the podcasts and history lessons. I'm at Ringside 73. My wife, Lisa, she's off the grid. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Ringside Reporter podcast. Check us out on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com, on Twitter at Ringside73, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Ringside73. Subscribe to us on iTunes.